This episode will have a special extended B-side cut exclusively on spinitpod.com, so be sure to swing on by and check it out. I've listened to SOS by SZA for months.
And I listened to it once yesterday.
Welcome to Spin It. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spin It, the record ranking podcast for people who'd rather be listening to music. I'm James, and with me is Connor.
And with me is James.
That is true. You know what? That's the first time in 141 episodes that you've said that, I think.
Keeping it fresh.
That's right. Something new. You never know what you're going to get every week. Something different. Hey, this is an exciting week. This is the first Grammy revisit kind of episode we're doing. You know, we did our Grammy special about Midnights.
That was its own revisit.
That also, yeah, was a Taylor Swift revisit. But then we talked about how we'd visit some other albums nominated for Album of the Year and kind of compare and contrast, see what we liked, what we didn't like, whether Midnights was the rightful champion, whether SZA maybe should have taken it home. We're starting that this week, and I'm stoked. As soon as I put this album on the Albums of the Month playlist, I knew there was going to be an episode about it. Before I even had scored it, I was like, yeah, this is one we need to talk about. Just because it's so unique. I think it unlike any other record we've really touched on so far.
Yeah, it is pretty unique. Wild that you were able to, you know, call that right away.
Well, yeah, sometimes you just know. It's also a really long album. So you'll probably have to find our thoughts on all the tracks over on the B-side extended version of the episode at spinitpod.com.
Yeah, this is the B-side.
It's actually, ironically, the first B-side we've done since the original Taylor Swift episode.
Well, so is this our first B-side of 2024?
It is, yeah.
Whoa, congrats, SZA.
Yeah, now, I don't know about you. I don't know about you, but every time that I feel like I hear SZA talked about or someone brings up SZA or I see a social media post about SZA, I feel like a lot of people go, who? I've never heard of her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of people don't know much about SZA, which is surprising to me a little bit.
I hadn't heard of them.
Really?
Well, until like all the Grammy stuff started up. And
yeah, that's fair. I also hadn't heard of her for quite some time. I feel like her name had come up in the past. I mean, her first album prior to SOS was like 5 years ago. But after SOS came out, I was like downtown near the arena one night, and there was just a huge, huge, huge crowd of people there waiting to get in. I was like, what on earth is this? And it was the tour. It was the SOS tour.
Oh.
Yeah. And so that kind of ignited me to SZA. And I was like, oh yeah, she's like it right now. She's big and getting bigger. I mean, 9 Grammy nominations this year is wicked impressive. And 3 Grammy wins, the second most of anybody all night. It's pretty big. So I feel like people will eventually soon probably stop saying, who's SZA? You know. They'll all listen to this podcast and then they'll know. But if you are one of those people that doesn't currently know about SZA, let me tell you.
Oh, you're gonna know by the time he's done talking.
You're darn right. Solana Imani Rowe was born in St. Louis, Missouri in 1989, but she spent most of her childhood in New Jersey. Her mom is a Christian and her dad is a Muslim, and she was raised Muslim and went to a religious school when she was a kid. She did a lot of sports like gymnastics and cheerleading. After high school, SZA went to college to be a marine biologist, which I think makes the album cover of her sitting in front of the ocean extra fitting.
Heck yeah.
Like, cool little Easter egg. She didn't actually finish school. She dropped out in her last semester. But in the meantime, she'd been making music on the side as a hobby. And clearly, it turned into much more than a hobby for her. Her big break came back in 2011. Her boyfriend at the time worked for a clothing company that sponsored Kendrick Lamar. At least for like a Kendrick Lamar show, right? They were connected in that way. So somehow, one of her demos lands in the hands of Punch Henderson, the president of Kendrick's then label Top Dog Entertainment. And he loved what she was doing. He reached out and kept in touch with her. And that kind of started everything. She came up with the stage name SZA, right? S-Z-A. It's taken in part from the Wu-Tang Clan. You remember we talked about on episode 117.
Sure did. I wondered that when I saw the name. I was like, is this like a... Honestly, when you first start talking about them and I didn't know who they were, I was like, is this a member of the Wu-Tang Clan who's gone solo? And then I was like, oh no, it's not.
No, it's not. But I mean, the Wu-Tang Clan will be back later in this episode. We're not done talking about them yet. But she definitely did take a lot of inspiration from the RZA and the GZA, especially RZA. But it was also heavily inspired by her religion and is based on the 5% nation's supreme alphabet. The S stands for sovereign. The Z stands for zigzag. zigzag, kind of representing self-enlightenment, and the A stands for Allah. So that's kind of the way she built her stage name and her identity. So, under her new name, she put out her first two EPs, Cease is a Run and S. She's got a knack for album titles, I think. I don't know, just something about both of those I really like. And Control and SOS, I like them all.
I mean, they're all pretty similar.
I feel like they are, but I can't put my finger on why.
Just like the short couple letter acronym-y or abbreviation style titles.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. It might be an abbreviation thing. Either way, they're punchy. But those first EPs were pretty darn good, and enough to finally get her signed to Top Dog in 2013, which made SZA the very first female artist on the label, which is huge. Soon, she starts to get featured on other TDE albums, and she opens for other related acts, which helps expand her audience even further.
Is this the only SZA album you've listened to?
Actually, so far, yes, it is.
Oh.
Yeah. I feel like I want to go back and try out Control, though. I want to see how we got to SOS. I don't know, frankly, what to expect. 5 years is a lot of time in between, and this album seems pretty unique for a lot of reasons, but I feel like Control would be worth checking out. But of course, also, after her S EP, she also had to release Z and A. Those also did pretty well. They were selling almost 7,000 copies in their first week, and they both debuted in the top 40 on the Billboard charts, which is pretty significant. And she's also contributing to songs for other artists, notably Beyoncé and Rihanna. And by the time A came out, she had plenty of other material to do stuff with. She had lots sitting in the vaults, ready to be released. So she signed her first major label contract with RCA, and her first record, Control, CTRL, came out in 2017. It was a pretty major breakout moment for her. It debuted at number 3 on the Billboard charts for a first album by a debut artist. Like, that's pretty great. It sold more than 125,000 units in week one. Critics also loved it. It's got a Metacritic score of 86, which is another reason I think I should look at it, you know? Seems to be pretty acclaimed. That year, she earned 5 Grammy nominations, including Best New Artist, which made her the 4th most nominated artist that year. But she actually went home empty-handed. I mean, nominations are an honor in their own right, but she did not take home any of the hardware. Obviously, that has since been changed. But yeah, you know, after a few more years of successful collaborations with major artists, she finally revealed in late 2021 that SOS was on the way.
And it got here.
It did get here eventually. It took a long time to see that promise through. SOS didn't come out for almost a year after that announcement until December of 2022. So another album of the year that predated the year of the album, really. I mean, we talked about with Midnights how it came out in 2022. So did SOS. Also, I mean, I guess we didn't mention it at the beginning, but obviously pretty stellar R&B album for the year. It won the Best Progressive R&B Album Grammy, which is huge. It's a little bit of everything, though, genre-wise. I don't think you could pigeonhole it into one genre, and I think that's really what she was striving for with this record. You know, you get a little bit of hip-hop, you get a little bit of pop, you get a little bit of rock, you get a little bit of rap, and it's all produced in this very interesting way. I think she kind of blends a lot of genres together here pretty effectively, and a lot of that is due to the production. And actually, based on what I read and found out about her, I think she kind of rejects the pigeonholing of an R&B artist, and she kind of thinks of it more as what she calls glitter trap. In fact, she says, "I have no idea what it sounds like to anyone else. It's so bizarre. It's weird that I can't put my finger on it. It's a little bit of everything."
Mm-hmm.
As far as her influences go, she claims a ton of, like, a wide range of artists, including Ella Fitzgerald and Ashanti as singers. She's been inspired by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Bjork, Jay-Z, the Wu-Tang Clan, ballet music. Like, it's across the board. And I think another reason you can't pigeonhole SOS is just the wide crew that worked on it. It features contributions from 34 musicians and a small army of more than 40 producers. So, I mean, put 40 people on the same project, yeah, you're gonna get a lot of different sounds out of it. Since she had so many years with the album queued up between announcement and release, she had plenty of time to tease and release singles. SOS had 6 of its 23 tracks released as singles. First of all, I mean, a 23-track double album is pretty big, but second, like, 6 tracks is almost enough to make an entire album out of. I mean, I guess these ones are pretty short, but, like, we've talked about albums that are barely longer than 6 tracks. Shoot, we've talked about albums that are 6 tracks. The Nice was 6 tracks, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So SZA released a whole album before the album.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, kinda. SOS debuted, unsurprisingly, at number 1 on the Billboard charts, and it stayed there for its first 7 weeks. It sold more than 318,000 album equivalent units, and so far, it's been the longest running number one album by a female artist in the decade.
My favorite kind of unit.
An album equivalent unit?
Yeah.
But yeah, number one album, SOS, the longest running number one by a female artist of the decade. Critically, SOS is also a winner, even bigger than Control. It got a Metacritic score of 90. It got 5 stars from NME, from the Daily Telegraph, 4 stars from The Guardian and Rolling Stone. And obviously, as a candidate for Album of the Year, it was pretty widely regarded as one of the best records of, 2023, but also 2022, when it came out in, December.
Yeah.
So it rocketed to the top of the list. And maybe that's recency bias, but I think it holds up. SOS also won a BET Award and a Soul Train Music Award for Album of the Year. And in 2023, it went triple platinum in the United States. That's 3 million copies in 1 year. It's also certified 2 times platinum in Brazil and New Zealand, platinum in Australia and Denmark, gold in France, Hungary, the Netherlands, Sweden, and the United Kingdom. Also, her tour supporting the album made 54 stops across North America and Europe, one of which was the one that I was next to. But 54 stops is an enormous tour. That's huge.
I don't know. We talked about somebody who did performed. Who was it? That was
BB King. We said worked.
BB King did a 365-day workday where 200 and some days of that was touring. So
yeah, he did. And I actually just read a biography about him that estimated he played 300 shows a year for most of the years of his life. He probably did hundreds of thousands of shows, but nobody even knows the exact total.
Yeah.
But they're not all BB King. 54 stops is a sizable tour. But yeah, that pretty much takes us up to this point in SZA's career. SOS is still the most recent thing she's done at the point of recording this. And yeah, it's pretty great. All in all, she's got 4 Grammys on 14 nominations. She's got a Golden Globe and plenty of other significant awards. As of 2023, Rolling Stone ranked her the 180th best singer of all time.
Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And honestly, she's got a voice.
Sure does.
She can sing. But yeah, that takes us to the end of the About SZA section. So now, all of you that listen to that, you can no longer go, who? When someone says anything about SZA. I'm not allowing
who?
That. No, it's not allowed. Either way, I'm ready to get tricked. Let's bring the mixtaper out here for some fact or spin, a game where I get lied to, and I have to play lie detector and figure out whether what I've been told is the truth or whether it's total bogus. Let's get the mixtaper on out here and play through some facts or spins about SZA. Let's see if he's gonna seek and destroy me.
Hey, it's me, the mixtaper.
Hello, mixtaper. How you doing this week?
Pretty good.
Good. You having a good days?
The best day I've had in a couple weeks. Didn't we go 50-50 last week?
No.
We're all out of order, so I don't know what happened.
Honestly, last week was a bit of a hot mess anyway.
Oh, that, yeah. Well, I'm definitely doing better than I was doing last week. That's right. Thanks for the reminder.
It got a little ugly when I switched up factor spins on you. So we're locking in answers diligently now.
Yes, we are.
Well, what's up first? What SZA facts or SZA spins are you bringing?
Who?
You got to pay up. I know you listened to the whole thing with Connor.
I didn't listen to it. Sorry, I was preparing for Factor Spin. I have no idea who SZA is. I'll have to go listen to the first half of this podcast when it comes out.
I guess you will. If you have no idea who SZA is, then I think I should just start guessing spin for all of your spins if you don't know any facts.
Fair enough. Let's start with an oldie but goodie.
Oh, no.
She performed at the Olympics.
Well, that is old. Well, we've had a couple of Olympic performers, but not for a while. I always have to ask because the first time it wasn't actually at the Olympics. And also another time it wasn't at the Olympics either. And also another time I think it still wasn't at the
I think more times than not it's not been at the actual Olympics.
I don't think we've had one person actually perform at the
Olympics. No, there was definitely one that it maybe was a spin, but there was one time I said it was at the Olympics at least. I don't remember if it was true or not.
Yeah, I don't think so. Casey Musgraves performed at the Olympics, fact, but it was for a news reporter outside the Olympics. Hank Williams yodeled at the Olympics. Spin. Fleetwood Mac performed at the Olympics. Spin. Stevie Wonder performed at the Olympics. Fact. I forgot about Stevie Wonder. Yeah, he did. Sufjan Stevens performed at the Olympics. Spin. And now SZA. So, of the 5 other times, only one's been real. But is she at the Olympics, an opening ceremony, a closing ceremony, a singing a national anthem? Although they don't really do that.
Well, you know how you said most of the times weren't at the Olympics.
And today is no exception.
Today is no exception.
Darn, what Olympic-related event is she performing at?
Tryouts?
Okay, yeah, we had Olympic tryouts before, too.
Yeah, she performed at the tryouts.
Like the qualifying stuff.
Yeah.
For a Summer Olympics?
Whichever one has gymnastics.
Okay, yeah, that's summer. What year?
2008 or 7, depending on...
Whoa.
Depending on the date. I'm not
on when
sure.
The trials are? Right, something... She did a trial for the 2008 Olympics.
Yeah, so I guess that would put it in 2007. They probably have it locked in. Was 2008 a Winter Olympic? I don't know. It was probably 2007. That's what I'm
going with. No, 2008 was the Summer Games because 8, 12, yeah. 16, 20 yep. would have been the Summers. So
yeah, so probably 2007 is what I'm going to go with.
Sure. What? What'd she perform in 2007? That's, I mean, when she was still like doing music as a hobby.
Some sort of gymnastics routine.
Oh, she performed. You did this to me once before too. Where somebody participated in an Olympic trial.
Did they?
I thought...
I had the brother was in the Olympics, and they like were there and performed that way.
But I don't remember. I'll have to go back and look.
I don't remember. But yeah, no. Yeah, she performed gymnastics.
Did she perform a routine like in hopes to be named to the Olympic team?
Yeah.
Wow. How'd she do? I mean, not an Olympian, but...
Unfortunately, she suffered that same year a knee injury that made her give up on her gymnast career. So... Not well. Didn't make it to the Olympics.
No, didn't make it to the Olympics, but that doesn't answer whether she would have made it to the Olympics if she hadn't.
Well, she probably would have qualified because she was ranked the 5th best gymnast in the U.S. at the time.
What?
That's,
really?
At least that's what the griot, that's what this article is saying. The 5th best in the U.S. So pretty good at it.
I was just doing some math in my head.
Okay.
Well, she was born in 1989. That means in 2007, she would have been 18, which is like still feasible gymnastics age. I was just fact checking.
What is not feasible gymnastics age?
No, you age out of like championship gymnastics really early. It's like wild. First of all, I mean, it takes a big physical toll, but also that's just like the way it is. I have gymnast friends that are like...
You did your own quick math there. Impressive.
5th best gymnast in the country is a really big sell.
That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's ambitious to lie about that.
Would you like a mixtape or guarantee?
No.
Because I'm afraid you'll go down a rabbit hole I don't want you to go down for both your and my sake.
What?
If this is a spin, it is not a spin because that detail is false.
No, I'm not going down that rabbit hole. No.
You know, we're like, oh, she maybe this happened, but she wasn't the 5th best. And so, you know, sometimes I try to trick you with a detail like that.
Yeah, you do.
I just didn't want you to do that.
Sure.
But yeah. 5th best in the U.S., tried to qualify for the Olympics, performed at the Olympic qualifiers for gymnastics.
What are the odds we have 6 Olympic-related people? I mean, well, really, just 2.
Well, what?
I guess that is irrelevant. Yeah, okay. I'll take the bait on this one. It seems like you maybe just found out she was a gymnast and went for this, but I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to say that this is true.
Lock that in before we go any farther?
I'm going to lock in that this is a fact, that this is a true thing, that she really was participating in Olympic trials.
This is almost a true fact, but unfortunately it's a spin. You gave me too much benefit, not enough doubt.
Oh, I guess so. What was the doubt I should have given you? What was I trusting that was wrong?
She had her knee injury in high school and had to stop gymnastics, so never got the chance to try out for the Olympics. But she was ranked her sophomore year of high school, ranked 5th in the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
She was very active in cheerleading and gymnastics in high school until she had a knee injury.
Huh. Darn.
You can see some of her gymnast skills, actually, in the music video for Good Days, which I guess is one of her songs.
It's one of the songs on this album.
Oh, yes, of course. I knew that.
You didn't listen to it. You don't know SZA, yeah. Apparently. Connor listened to it and knows SZA.
In the Good Days video, she's swinging around like a pole all skillfully, apparently.
Yeah, I thought maybe, I mean, that's another thing that kind of sold me on it, is I think, you know, Kill Bill is obviously very, like, acrobatics focused too.
Yeah, so she was the best gymnast, and
it was a natural progression from there, right?
She spent 13 years as a competitive gymnast as well before her injury, so like,
yeah, wow,
she trained hard for it.
No, you have to. Yeah,
yeah,
if you get to be the 5th best gymnast by
and also the reason I went Olympics with it is because she had aspirations of competing in the Olympics until the knee injury forced her into retirement.
Wow, what a retirement career she's had.
She wanted this to be a true fact.
Well, hey, listen, let's negotiate this. If she ever does perform at the Olympics, this summer maybe, can I get that point back?
If it's for gymnastics.
Oh, but it could just be performing, you know.
Yeah, well, that's not how it works.
Yeah, I know. Well, I can guarantee SZA won't be competing in gymnastics at the 2024 Olympics.
She hunted heffalumps.
She hunted heffalumps?
Yeah.
Great. So I know what you're talking about in the sense that I know what a heffalump is. But for those of you that don't, heffalumps are like fictional nightmare elephant creatures from Winnie the Pooh.
Yep.
Like the children's books and movies.
Sure thing.
So you're saying that SZA hunted for heffalumps and woozles. Heffalumps and woozles are the other ones. They're like weasels.
Just heffalumps.
Yeah, sure.
Can't confirm if there was any hunting of woozles.
Sure. So is this connecting SZA to Winnie the Pooh in some way?
Yeah, in multiple ways, including that she hunted heffalumps.
Is SZA like making a cameo in the heffalump movie?
Nope.
Okay, how's she hunting heffalumps?
Are they making a heffalump movie?
They made one. It's called Pooh's Big Heffalump Movie.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's a whole thing. It was a big movie.
I thought you meant they were like making like a movie about heffalumps exclusively. Like, not like.
No.
It's like, what a weird spinoff thing to do.
No. How's she hunt heffalumps?
I don't know how. Just that she said she was going to when posting a photo of herself on Twitter. Actually, it would have been Twitter at the time.
She tweeted a picture of herself dressed as Winnie the Pooh?
Nope.
Okay.
Dressed in a SZA Winnie the Pooh crossover merchandise shirt.
What?
That's the best way I can describe it.
It's a SZA Winnie the Pooh crossover merchandise shirt. Let's unpack that. What's the shirt look like? Is it just a red Winnie the Pooh style shirt?
Yeah, it's like a shirt with like a version, like a cartoon drawn version of her holding. It's like the picture of Christopher Robin holding Winnie the Pooh, or like
Walken.
I think I combined Walken and Robin said Wobbin.
Christopher Walken and Winnie the Pooh.
Well, here's what happened, because it's him walking.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I combined.
Right.
My brain was not caught up to my tongue there. It's the classic Winnie the Pooh image of Christopher Robin walking, holding Winnie the Pooh's hand, and he's holding the like red balloon.
Yeah.
But instead of a cartoon SZA. Christopher Robin, it's a cartoon SZA.
Okay, and everything else about the picture is the same?
I don't know what the original, I guess I should look at the original.
Well, like, it's still Winnie the Pooh, he's still holding a red balloon. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Is this officially licensed?
Yeah.
Wait, Winnie the Pooh's public domain.
Oh. Well, this was before it was public domain, and only certain versions of Winnie the Pooh were public domain.
That's true.
But this was before that.
Okay. Because I could see it being a thing around the time he entered the public domain and kind of being a craze, you know? But this is, you said, this is officially licensed then.
I mean, she sold it, so I guess I assume it's officially licensed. And this was before it was public domain, so it would have to be.
Right. Straight out of the 100-acre wood. Why Pooh? Does she like Pooh?
Big fan of Winnie the Pooh, yeah.
Okay. Is this the only piece of Pooh and SZA crossover merch that exists?
Yes.
This is tough. I feel like, and I'm going to feel stupid if it's wrong, maybe it's just like some kind of fake memory. I feel like I've seen that image. I feel like...
Where would you have seen that image?
I don't know.
I feel like you're trying to pull an elevator's brands on me here, where you're like, somewhere in the back of my memory, I've subconsciously remembered seeing this shirt on a random passerby that I saw in 20 whatever, you know, like, you're just like trying, you're gonna pull some stupid crap on me here.
Well, I guess that is a question I didn't ask. You know, when did she sell the shirt? Pre Winnie the Pooh? I mean, he came into public domain in like 2021.
How long does the copyright last?
Oh, it depends on a lot of things.
This was in 2014.
2014.
Yeah, 90th anniversary of Winnie the Pooh.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like I have seen that image, and maybe I haven't. I've seen the Christopher Robin one. I feel like I might have seen the SZA one. What if this is a spin and it doesn't exist? And then I just am saying all this and it's not even real.
Well, that's for you to decide.
And just to be clear, the fact, I mean, you said she hunted heffalumps. That has nothing to do with...
Oh, in the post she made...
That's what she said.
People are like, oh, watch out for the heffalumps. And she's like, I hunt heffalumps. And she was bantering on Twitter.
Sure.
And so I just took that for the shock value of the title.
I thought so. I just wanted to be clear.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that this one is a fact. I, for some reason, am totally buying into that she likes Winnie the Pooh.
Are you locking in fact?
And I'm totally feeling like I've seen this. I'm locking in fact.
Well, now I have to go make sure it's not a true fact because I completely made this up. But knowing you, you have seen this shirt somewhere and it's somehow true. But it's supposed to be a spin.
Oh, it's a spin? Wow. Maybe not.
Yeah, completely made up.
Wow.
But your memory has proven me wrong before. So let me just Google Sizzle Winnie the Pooh and just make sure.
Oh, no, but there is a Pinterest post about a Winnie the Pooh and SZA collab.
What? Where? Send me the link.
I kid you not. Of all the random things you could have put together, it seems like people have at least
thought it,
joked about a Winnie the Pooh and SZA crossover.
Oh.
It says hashtag SZA on it. SZA looks gorgeous wearing a Winnie the Pooh t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
In an Instagram post.
Wow, holding Winnie the Pooh.
Holy
yeah,
crap. No. It's even deeper. You made up something half true.
Whoa, she's wearing a Pooh shirt. It's just not the Pooh shirt and she's not on it. I don't know why I even went to Winnie the Pooh. I was just like, freaking Winnie the Pooh. I haven't done anything with that before.
Maybe you self-consciously did it too.
I would have never seen this. I didn't know who SZA was.
Yeah, I know.
Because I went to the Heffalump thing. I was like hunting Heffalumps. That's funny. What could I do with that? And that just kind of, it's kind of why it was completely disconnected from that title. I liked the title, but it needed to make something somewhat true. And this is nuts. This is the closest I've come to making up a true thing.
I know. Oh, that's so wild.
Nuts. You know, we've joked about that before. Of like, oh, what if this is true?
Yeah, but this one genuinely,
this is scary close.
It's so close. SZA and Winnie the Pooh.
Wild.
Darn it. I guess I made that up, but not really. Like, my brain tricked me a little bit, but
yeah,
I certainly feel a little vindicated that it wasn't just from your brain. Wow, that's unbelievable. I'm still, don't get me wrong, still pretty sad that I'm 0-2 so far.
Yeah.
0-Pooh.
It's time for another return of an old but good Spin It reference.
Oh, no. I'm glad it wasn't a repeat fact the first time. I was worried we were going to get something like the hat or the worm.
This one I have titled, Her Life Finds a Way.
Life Finds a Way. SZA found her inner Goldblum?
Yep.
Where, you know, you just find a way. Everything finds a way. That's the inner Goldblum in us all. We all find ways.
That we haven't made that joke in probably 50-some episodes.
It's been a long time, but we have a whole series of merch based around the inner Goldblum.
We have our iconic logo. One of the only pieces of art for this podcast that I've made that's actually any good.
True. You're an idea guy. You get some concepts in.
Concept king.
Anyway, this is either related to Jeff Goldblum directly or Jurassic Park. Or both, I guess.
Think more broad.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Okay. SZA likes dinosaurs.
I mean, yeah, she does.
She does. Fact. Lock it in.
This is a spit.
No, she hates dinosaurs. What about dinosaurs? What's the deal?
She honestly does. I don't know. She likes dinosaurs. Anyway, the point is, growing up, she thought she wanted to be an archaeologist.
Oh, why is that?
She likes dinosaurs.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
No. Before she settled on marine biology and then eventually music, she thought digging stuff up in the dirt's pretty cool.
The Randy Travis treatment, digging up bones.
But, you know, that didn't work out as she decided to become a pop sensation.
Sure.
But, you know, life finds a way.
How do you mean? Is she somehow an archaeologist in any capacity now? Has she found a way?
Well, in 2020, she got really into dinosaurs again.
Yeah? What'd she do?
You know, people are still reeling from the success of Control.
Of course.
And they wanted, that was like in 2018 or whatever. And so it'd been like 2 years and people were locked down in a, getting ready to be locked down in a pandemic. And so they were all, you know, things were crazy in the world and they just wanted more SZA music.
Okay.
But instead, all she had for them was dinosaur farts.
Dinosaur farts?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
She took to Twitter to talk about dinosaur farts.
What'd she say about dinosaur farts?
Well, just that, you know, how much gas cows make when they fart and it goes into the atmosphere and it's harmful for the ozone.
Sure.
Think about dinosaurs who ate like 100 times what a cow eats and how much they were probably farting. And
that's true. The atmospheric composition was a little different back then already.
Yeah, I mean, they were messing up their own ozone one fart at a time.
Well,
not any humans there to do anything about it.
No, I guess not, but the meteor would kind of be a game changer.
Yeah. This conversation really kind of lit the fires under Twitter. People were debating dinosaur farts and how dangerous they were to the ozone and
to the atmosphere. Interesting.
Yeah. And then there's a whole other section of fans who just said, please stop talking about dinosaur farts and give us more music.
Yeah, the two things don't have to be mutually exclusive. What if she released new music about dinosaur farts?
I would love that.
I have to be honest. Do you realize that that's not the first time specifically dinosaur farts have come up on this podcast?
I don't realize that.
There's an episode where we talk about it. It's one of our more historic artists, maybe Duke Ellington or something, how he was born close to the very beginning of recorded sound.
Oh my gosh, I do remember that.
And how we talked about how a dinosaur fart would have been recorded. I don't know.
That's amazing.
So this is immediately like very suspicious.
Sure.
But believe me, I don't give you enough credit to have remembered that.
Less benefit, more doubt.
But it is a weird coincidence. Hey, if I had a nickel for every time my favorite music podcast talked about dinosaur farts, I'd have two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it happened twice.
It's more than some people make off of their Spotify streams.
You're right. That's like,
think about how many streams it would take to get two nickels.
2,000 Spotify streams.
Anyway.
So really what I'm trying to figure out is true here is if SZA, A, wanted to be an archaeologist in youth, which, I mean, same, who didn't? If SZA tweeted about dinosaur farts, is that it? Is that what my two points of truth are here?
Yeah, pretty much.
I believe half of this.
Which half?
I believe that she tweeted about dinosaur farts.
Oh, okay.
I really do. And I bet that started a dialogue with fans a little bit. I'm sure that tweet probably exists. I'm skeptical about her wanting to be an archaeologist when she was a kid and this somehow being a return to that. I definitely think the dinosaur tweet could be true. I definitely could see you tying it in with Inner Goldblum and life finding a way. And I guess a thing that would help you make that leap is if she was into archaeology as a kid. Plus, I mean, marine biology and archaeology, they're both like ologies. You know, they're both sciencey and animal focused a lot.
Yeah, they're both ologies.
A lot of history and fossil records involved in both. I think this is a spin. I think it's half true.
Thinks it's a spin.
And so I'm going to lock in that maybe she tweeted it, but I don't think she grew up wanting to be an archaeologist. Like I just said, who didn't? So I guess I kind of undermined that, but you get the point.
This is a true fact.
Really, it's a true fact. And it would have been so easy for me to just say fact. But I thought, you know, the fact that there were two potential points of failure on the table, if either one of them was a spin, I would have been covered. But really, that's all true.
Yeah, I mean, the probability was in your favor, right? I mean,
it was, but
there was only one way it was true, but there was three ways that it could have been false.
Yeah.
So.
And unfortunately, it was true. Very interesting, though. Very cool. I think the more that I learn about SZA, the more I like her.
It turned into a whole thing where she was talking about that, and then people got really heated on Twitter, and then it, like, diverged into just, like, global warming debate. And she was like, y'all, this, like, started as a simple conversation about farts.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Got one more interesting one for you here.
Yeah, this is a rough week for me so far.
Yeah, we're in shutout territory, I now realize.
For the normal cut, the B-sides, you know, maybe in for some more.
Yeah, well, for all the people who don't listen to the B-sides, they're in shutout territory.
Yeah, I know. Let's get it over with.
She had a strange dream.
Was it about Heffalumps and Woozles?
No, but closer than maybe you have any right to be with that joke.
Really? What was it actually about?
A demonic life-sized rabbit.
Oh, yeah, that is actually really close. What kind of a dream is that? Is it like around Easter time?
No, I mean, maybe. I don't know when it took place, but it's not really an Easter-related dream.
No, but I mean, if you're just talking about like life-sized rabbits, Easter is definitely the holiday, the season that comes to mind.
Sure.
So what's the rabbit doing in her dream?
Telling her that the world will end in 28 days.
Ooh. I hope she had this dream more than 27 days ago. When did she have the dream?
The article was written in 2020, so sometime before that.
Interesting. Why would the rabbit say that?
Well, apparently the rabbit had it on good authority that the world was going to end in 28 days. They believed it.
Okay.
So the rabbit says, hey, world's going to end 28 days, right?
Yeah.
Then bounces off, hops off, says it continues their dream.
Oh, the dream continues. Sure.
Oh, yes. But Frank keeps popping up every once in a while just to be like, hey, world's going to end. That doesn't matter.
Sure.
One example she gives here is that she was like in line at the BMV to renew her license. And Frank popped up and said, why are you bothering with this? You know, the world's going to end in 28 days.
Like in her dream, she was at the DMV?
Yeah. And then in one of them, she was like in school again.
Boy, that sucks.
So a lot of very boring places. But I guess that's kind of the point, right? I guess it was was like the rabbit's like, stop doing all this boring stuff.
Mm-hmm. So does this only happen once? It's not like a recurring dream. It's just multiple instances in the same dream?
As far as I'm aware.
Did she do anything differently when she woke up? Did she like stop going to the DMV? I don't know. Like do anything for the next 28 days?
I have no idea, but I would assume if I had that dream, I would just wake up and go, what a weird dream. And then continue my life as normal. But
yeah, 4 weeks later, you'd regret it.
Yeah.
You're kind of like describing the plot of like Harvey.
Harvey?
Right? The giant invisible imaginary friend bunny that helps the guy live his life and like predicts the future.
I have no idea what you're talking about. What? Harvey? Hang on.
It's a play. It's a play about a giant rabbit that like tells this guy the future. Think it's like an imaginary friend.
Weird. I feel like I've seen this actually. I think I've seen this image for the playbill before.
Yeah. You just described the plot of Harvey, but it's in a dream.
Harvey shows up and tells a dude that the world's gonna end?
I don't know. I mean, not that specifically.
Oh.
But
so you're saying the only similarity to what I just described was that there is a talking rabbit that follows somebody around.
A life-sized future-predicting giant rabbit seems pretty specifically exactly like what you just said. So I'm really immediately skeptical of this.
Sure.
Has she said anything else about this dream? She had any other weird dreams? Like, why is she talking about this?
It's in an article that says, the title of the article is, here are 10 weird facts about SZA that will make you appreciate her even more.
How does this make me appreciate her even more? I just said everything new I learned about her makes me like her more, which is true so far. This one's strange.
It does say weird facts, though, and this is pretty weird, so it's got that part right.
It's too much like Harvey. I think it's a spin.
I will, and again, regardless of if this is a true fact or a fake fact, I had no idea Harvey existed. It has nothing to do with Harvey.
Okay, but come on. This is such a weird...
Don't let that affect your answer if you're leaning spin. I'm just telling you, if you're going to lock in spin, it is not... Don't go down the Harvey train because...
Don't go down... You said train and rabbit hole would have been the perfect metaphor right there.
Yeah, it would have. I'm so sorry. Let me take that again. Don't go down the rabbit hole.
Sure. Okay.
I had no idea that existed.
This is a weird week of bizarre half-truths. Like, the poo thing was almost true. This is almost Harvey.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, what if you just made this up just like the poo thing, and it is exactly what Harvey is?
It's really not that much like Harvey from what you've described. It just has a life-size talking rabbit. I mean, I have no idea what this rabbit does in Harvey, but...
It predicts the future.
All this rabbit did was say, the world's gonna end, stop doing boring stuff. That's not the same as predicting the future.
I think I can't... I can't call this a fact.
Can't call it a fact?
I can't call it a fact. This is a spin.
Fair enough.
Whether you made it up totally from scratch or not, I don't know. This is a spin.
This is going to be revealed on the B-side. Go listen.
No, you can't do that.
Dude, that'd be so mean, right? Wouldn't that be so mean?
That'd be unbelievable.
No, this is a spin.
Oh, thank goodness.
A spin.
And it's not a spin about Harvey?
No! It doesn't. Again, from what you described, it's really not that similar, other than there's a talking rabbit.
You just made this up?
Well, no, this is, however, the plot of the movie Donnie Darko that came out in 2001, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and one Drew Barrymore.
Yeah. What are you doing in that man suit? I haven't seen Donnie Darko. I know that one part.
I figured you hadn't, so I figured it was safe. It was.
Yeah, but you didn't count on Harvey.
So, well, on the list of the top Drew Barrymore movies, like most iconic stuff, is like the top three. I don't know if this is a good list or not. I'm not really that into Drew Barrymore. But it's got Scream as number one. I couldn't give you the plot of Scream. There's no way you'd fall for that.
No.
And then Charlie's Angels. Can't give you the plot of that. And then number three was Donnie Darko. So I was like, okay, sure. Yeah, let's go with that one. And the whole reason I went down the Drew Barrymore rabbit hole, said it that way the first time, this time.
Yes, you did.
But anyway, it's because she put out a song called Drew Barrymore on Control.
Oh, so there was a little bit of a breadcrumb trail I could have followed.
Yeah, it just had nothing to do with Harvey. I had no idea Harvey existed.
Well, look, Jimmy Stewart's in it. It's a big invisible rabbit. It's exactly what you described. I'm just saying.
It really isn't. I feel like you keep using this word exactly incorrectly.
You described a life-size, malicious rabbit that exists in someone's head and predicts the future. Harvey.
That is not what I described.
Yes, it is.
I described a life-size, malicious rabbit that says the world's going to end and then just
predicts the future.
Criticizes the person's. Oh, yeah. But that's derivative of what I said. You're like making it less than what it is. They simply say that world's going to end and then they judge the main character for the choices they make. Whereas it sounds like yours is a friendly rabbit who helps somebody through life.
Gets somebody committed to a sanitarium.
Oh, well, still.
Yeah, you know, potato, potato. It's still eerily similar.
It's more similar than it had any right to be, but you're overplaying the similarity a little bit.
Maybe.
But yeah.
This is a weird week for Factor Spit.
It is a weird week. Let's see if it gets any weirder on the B-side.
I guess.
Well, you guys got a lot of songs to talk about, so I guess I will meow on out of here.
All right. Thanks, Mixtaper, for another week.
Oh, okay. Not like awesome week.
No, well, I mean.
Malicious week.
Just week.
Just week. No descriptors on this week.
Nope, you did not earn an adjective. Yellow.
Oh, a yellow week. All right, I'll take that. Yeah.
All right. Welcome back, Connor.
I have returned.
You sure have. Let's talk about the album cover of SOS.
Let's. I heard she almost drowned at sea.
Yeah. The art for SOS features SZA sitting out on a diving board over the water in a St. Louis Blues jersey, a nod to where she was born. It also actually is a reference to a famous, very similar photo of Princess Diana on a yacht in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
SZA said, originally, I was supposed to be on top of a shipping barge, but in the references that I pulled for that, I pulled the Diana reference because I just loved how isolated she felt, and that was what I wanted to convey the most. And then last minute, we didn't get clearance to the shipping barges that we wanted, and we were like, we're going to build the diving board instead. So there it is. They conscripted a diving board, and I'm glad they ditched the shipping barge. That sounds a little kind of boring, I guess. But, I mean, the diving board is captivating. She really does look out there in the middle of nothing.
I like how none of the boat is in the picture, so it makes it feel, to me, I'm picturing it's just a really long diving board that's attached to land somewhere, but she's out in the middle of the ocean.
I'm picturing, like, maybe it's a diving board that's just in the middle of the ocean.
But what would it be attached to?
A ladder.
And what's the ladder attached to?
The ocean floor.
Oh, the ladder's attached to the floor, and that's cool. I do like that.
Yeah, it's just like a big pole, and then you could just go out and dive. Be pretty fun.
If a person jumps off a diving board in the middle of the ocean and no one's around,
do they splash? Make a splash? I'm going to say yes, but we really may never know. SZA might. We won't. Now, we do have a lot of tracks to talk about today.
Yes, so we're going to talk about the good ones, and the rest of them will be... No, okay.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the more popular or our favorites, and then we're going to have to make some cuts for time to the normal episode, so the rest of the 23 tracks.
But they're all available on the B-side.
Darn right.
Go check it out on our website, www.spinipod.com.
The www is important.
Go there, listen to the full length.
That's right. It's fuller. It's the canon version of the podcast episode.
Yeah.
Up first is the title track, SOS.
Beep, 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 beep.
Are you trying to do Morse code for SOS?
Yeah, but I have no idea what it is.
Okay. Yeah, well, it does start with Morse code for SOS. It's dot, 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 dash, 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 dot, dot, dot.
Oh, beep, beep, beep. How do you do a dash?
It's like long. A dot is a quick tap and a dash is a...
Oh, beep, beep, beep. Beep, 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 beep.
There you go. That's Morse code for SOS.
Like that?
Mm-hmm.
I did it. Anyway.
Yeah, SOS actually is not just a title track. It's SZA's first ever title track.
First ever title track?
Yeah, it's kind of a cursory overview of all the album's themes. And it's a bit of a reintroduction since she spent more than a half decade between official album releases.
I like SOS.
SOS, the title track, debuted at number 32 on the Billboard Hot 100. It's just a little short song, and actually that's one thing that I found about this album that I really liked is the compact size of all these tracks. I mean, it's a long release with 23 tracks, but really it's only an hour and 8 minutes for that many songs, and they're all relatively short, 2.5, 3 minutes. Some of them, like this one and others, are less than 2 minutes, so it stays moving pretty well. There's really only 2 songs that are more than 4 minutes, and one is just barely that.
Yeah, it goes by fast.
It does, which I think is super helpful, because boy, if it didn't, this album would be a beast. SOS is interesting too. It's bookended by, I mean, the whole album is bookended by crying, calling out for help. You know, she sings it in the beginning of this track, and it comes back again later at the end of the album. It's really kind of priming us, opening the door emotionally for all the stuff that's going to follow. And the stuff that does follow is one of the biggest songs on the album. Kill Bill is up next, track 2. It was the 5th single from the album, and it was SZA's first global and US number 1. It spent 8 weeks at number 2, and then finally it got that last bump to the top spot with a remix with Doja Cat, which actually makes the song tied for the 2nd longest stint at number 2 before reaching number 1, which is really interesting. Also, it broke Lil Nas X's record for the longest number 1 on the Hot R&B Hip Hop Songs chart with 21 weeks. What did you think of Kill Bill?
I also like Kill Bill.
Good. I liked it.
I like the interesting instrumentals with the melodic but fast vocals.
Yeah, the instrumentals was a thing I wasn't sure about on this one. It's kind of high-pitched and wobbly. I don't know, this song just wasn't what I expected off the bat like this.
Also, is Kill Bill the one that they kept playing every time the song came up at the Grammys? You know how they'll like play a snippet of the songs?
Yeah, this is one of the most popular from the album.
Because like I recognized the chorus, so it's like, I don't know where I would have heard it other than maybe at the Grammys.
She performed the song at the Grammys.
Oh, is this?
Yeah, with all the martial artists and the swords.
Okay, that's why.
Plus, it's just a popular song. Kill Bill's been certified 3 times platinum.
Wow.
Yeah. And just like her Grammy performance, the music video is pretty largely based on the Kill Bill movies, which I sadly haven't seen yet.
The mixtaper thought about going and pulling some Kill Bill related stuff for Factor Spin.
That would have been sneaky.
Well, I thought it was a little too obvious.
I mean, it would have probably been if I had seen the movie.
I wasn't sure if you had, or he wasn't sure if you had.
Yeah, no, I haven't yet. It's a very sing-songy kind of song.
It is. I like it.
It's kind of funny because the subject matter is so absurd.
Not. Yeah.
It's dark, but it's like, it's so far-fetched that I can't take it seriously as a song, which I don't think it's meant to be, really. It's complicated. You know, Kill Bill is a complicated song.
Sure.
I might kill my ex. Not the best idea. The understatement of the century. I love that. I really like the production on this album. You know, going into it, I didn't know SZA. I didn't know what to expect. Kill Bill kind of set a tone for the rest of the record that I think for the most part it holds to really faithfully.
Okay.
And it grew on me over time. It's just very echoey, underwater kind of style is just how I think of it. Maybe that's just because I'm influenced by the album cover a little bit, but there's definitely this like bigness to the sound, even on quieter tracks and softer moments that I really like.
Sure. This like openness.
Yeah.
It gives you vibes of like, I don't know, like you said, the ocean or like Grand Canyon. There's something huge and open and spacey.
Yeah. I think a lot of what does that is what they do to her voice.
And I mean, and then like the synth and stuff gives you like some techno-y space vibes. Yeah. So yeah, I kind of get that vibe too.
Yeah, Kill Bill's really cool. What about Seek and Destroy?
This one got a little repetitive lyric-wise for me.
You know she had to do it to you.
But I liked it. I liked the sound of it.
Yeah, instrumentally, I think I like it better than Kill Bill in a lot of ways.
It's more traditional. Kill Bill had some unique instrumental stuff going on.
That's true.
That this one's a little more what you'd anticipate a song to do.
Maybe. I also like how she pushes her vocal range on this one. Goes way up into the higher stratosphere and stuff. It gives a nice little new texture to the album this early on. I like it. It's been certified gold. Debuted at number 24 on the Hot 100. And it's all about the ways that love can tear you down and just be painful. You didn't like the Do It To You chorus? I think that's the best part of the song.
It's just, the first time around, it was very catchy, but I was just tired of it by the end of the song. It's one of the longer songs.
At 3 minutes and 20 seconds, yeah.
Yeah, and it just, there's a lot of, I'll do it to you, over and over.
Sure. I guess I like the dynamic contrast between the quieter verses and the chorus where it picks up. That's what keeps it engaging for me. And there's a nice bridge in the middle. But I can't fault you for saying it's repetitive. Probably, of the songs on this album, it may be one of the worst repeat offenders. And that's not like repeat offenders, it's an offender of repeating.
Yeah.
I guess. Does that, you know what I'm saying? Seek and Destroy is just such a cool name for a track.
It is.
I actually really like Blind a lot, which is maybe a basic opinion. It's by the stream numbers more popular than Love Language. Not as popular as Low, but Blind is interesting. Blind got to number 12 in the US and of course has been certified platinum like so many of these other hits. She actually debuted it live on Saturday Night Live.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Blind has also really been highly praised for its lyrics. People said that it was some of the best lyricism of the entire year of 2022. And again, it came out in December, so they quickly jumped on that. Pitchfork called Blind a dazzling statement piece. And they said stylistically, it almost resembles a Sufjan Stevens song, which is a wild but really intriguing comparison to draw to it.
Hmm.
And I can't really, I mean, when I listened to it, I didn't get that sense that it was like a Sufjan Stevens song, but if I put that thought in my head and listen to it through that lens, yeah, okay.
You can see it.
Yeah, with kind of the way the instruments are constructed up behind her, it's different than a lot of the rest of the songs on this album. And the vocal runs that she does on Blind are really interesting. Like, it's just her voice, which is really cool. And I mean, the way it's produced, it kind of takes on its own nature. I really do like the messaging of it too. You know, it's this personal look into the negative effects that past relationships have had on her and her self-esteem and her reputation. Basically, she's become blind to all the love inside herself, and it's made her susceptible to all the bad effects of this toxic relationship. And it's her kind of wrestling with that and coming to terms with it. There's just a certain tension to it that those strings bring.
The only thing I didn't really care for in this song was the word blind over and over and the way it's laid over itself. I didn't care for that.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's like one of the main parts of the song.
It's only done twice.
Yeah, true.
The second time wasn't as bad, but the first time it did seem a little like modulated at times. The way they made it overlap over and over. Kind of weird.
They kind of instrumentalify it.
Yeah.
Instrumorph, as AJR might call it.
I was just over it by the time it was done. The second time, is it like an outro? It worked. And I think if they'd only done it there, I wouldn't have complained.
Yeah.
But doing it midway through the song, did not care for it.
I don't know. I think the cool thing about doing it midway through the song is that then using it as an outro makes it a callback, whereas it's just a call.
Yeah, I didn't need it to be a callback.
Well, touche.
They could have just called.
Leave a message. Could have just called and left a message. I really like Used, featuring Don Toliver.
Our first feature?
It is our, well, Travis Scott, I think, is there for a little bit on one of the earlier songs, but he comes back bigger later, so I figured we'd talk about him there.
Yeah, so he's not featured in the title, though.
Not yet.
We have three features that are called out in the title.
Four.
Four. You are correct. My bad.
Yep.
I did not scroll far enough to see the final track.
No, and one of them is Travis Scott, but he's also up there on low.
Yeah.
We'll see what the odds are that Travis Scott or Don Toliver's a favorite feature. This is actually also the first time SZA and Don Toliver have worked together, which is nice. Used is such a fun kind of triple entendre. There's a lot of wordplay at work here.
Yeah, which is why I was actually surprised that this wasn't the one that got praise for lyrics.
Yeah, I don't know what the people want, apparently, but I like Used. I think it's one of the best, like, title to gimmick songs on the album. Because, you know, we get three Used. I've been used to being this way, right? I've kind of grown complacent with things that are going on. She's familiar with the feeling. She's being used by this person who's taking advantage of her. And things have been this way in the past. They used to be this way. I'm used to it. I'm being used. And it's been this way for a long time. That's the three angles that we kind of get at.
Yeah.
It's fun. And it starts with a little clip of her grandmother, just like another song we'll see later. And just like songs we've talked about in the past. Ariana Grande had that song that started with her grandma.
And yet none of them have won a Grammy.
No. Well, this one did, just not for the song. I mean, the whole album did. This is a grandma on a Grammy-winning album. Grammy with a Grammy. Used also debuted at number 30 on the Hot 100, which I still have to point out means it was lower than low by a good bit.
Yeah.
Not lower than, you know what I mean? It's lower than the song low.
I liked it better.
I did too, for sure. Up next, another Grammy-winning track, and one of my actual lingering favorites as well, Snooze. It was the best R&B song at this year's Grammy Awards. It initially debuted at number 29, but it's another song that got a remix boost. The remix sent it to number 3, making Snooze SZA's 8th top 10 single of all time, 5 of which, by the way, were from SOS. In fact, Snooze got several remixes built into their own little Snooze EP that she released. It's all about wanting to live in the moment with the person that you love. You know, they're so important, you can't snooze. You want to be present with them all the time. You want to make the most out of life. You can't snooze. Can't sleep on it.
I also really like Snooze.
Good, I'm glad. It would be on my shorter list for a playlist pick, I think.
Ooh.
I don't think it would get my choice, but I did. I sat down and I just liked so many of these songs to such a degree that I did have to make a list, and I kind of have my own top 3 for the end of this episode. Yeah. I like the lazy kind of vibe of Snooze. It feels like a summer afternoon.
It feels like somebody just waking up, still a little groggy, still a little slow.
Yeah, it's really nice. Actually, Snooze wasn't even originally intended to be an album cut. In late 2021, she went in to collaborate with Babyface on the song for him, but it was so good that she wanted it for herself. So they shared it a little bit. She took it.
Who else did that? We had that so much time where somebody like wrote a song for somebody and went, nah, this is too good. You can't have it.
Hank Williams did it with like Honky Tonk Blues or one of those big ones.
Yeah.
The music video for Snooze features several celebrity cameos, including Justin Bieber and Benny Blanco.
Oh, really?
Days actually ranked it the 4th best music video of 2023. I haven't seen it. I can't speak to that, but that's what others have said. Also, wild fact, the sheet music for Snooze has been published.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is strange to me because it's mostly drums and 2 chords.
That doesn't surprise me, though, because it's so popular and it's easily playable.
Yeah, it is. I think she does some really good vocal work on Snooze, too. One of the highlights. Just, she really sings the heck out of it.
Yeah.
She's standing there, she's
just wanting people to notice her.
Darn it, you took that from me. Yeah, I was headed right to it. Well, I noticed her.
I like the way Gone Girl starts.
Gone Girl with that like haunting kind of vocal.
The ooh.
Yeah, I know. It's wild, isn't it? Did you recognize Gone Girl in any fashion?
Should I have?
Yeah, a little bit. Not maybe in this style or this context, Gone Girl interpolates Daryl Hall and John Oates, and She's Gone.
Oh.
Yeah, it's derived from She's Gone, from Abandoned Luncheonette that we talked about in episode 131. I mean, I guess at this point, 10 episodes ago. So, understandable if it's maybe faded from your memory a little bit, but what a track.
I was actually just listening to some Hall & Oates.
Daryl Hall and John Oates.
Sorry, you're right.
Yeah.
Don't call them Hall & Oates.
They're particular. No.
Yeah. Both of their songs came up in my most recent drive. Both of their playlist picks. Last time I was driving.
Oh, we got Las Vegas Turnaround and what else?
That was too long ago. I don't remember.
It was on your most recent drive today?
Yeah, on the way home.
Okay, sure. No wonder you don't remember She's Gone. Wait, is... Hold on.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, She's Gone is the other song on the playlist.
Oh, no.
You just listened to it today.
Oh, man.
Well, now you know.
I like the chorus for Gone Girl.
Me too, because it's practically written by Daryl Hall and John Oates.
Yeah, but I like this performance of it.
She's gone, gone girl, gotta learn how to face it. Yeah, I know, it's a good performance. It's a solid interpolation, because I think it's still recognizable.
Yeah.
But it's obviously her own twist.
The like chorus sound to the original Gone, Gone Girl, and then SZA coming in to finish it up. It's good.
Mm-hmm. It's different enough that I had to Google, did she do this on purpose? And Google was like, yes. And I was like, I knew it. Made me feel really vindicated. Gone Girl debuted at number 43 on the Hot 100, which is wrong. It's a true fact, but that is incorrect, Billboard. It should have been higher. That was way too low. 43? It's better than, I would say, maybe most of the other songs on this album, in my opinion. My humble opinion. I liked it a lot, and so I'm sad it didn't score higher. It is also, though, the second longest song.
It's true.
So it kind of feels like a big chunk right in the middle of this album.
No, but it still didn't feel like it overstayed its welcome. Unlike my other bottom three track, Smoking on My X-Pack.
Ooh, wow. I hope we're moving from one of your bottom three to one of your closer to top threes. Track 12 is Ghost in the Machine featuring Phoebe Bridgers, the Grammy winner for Best Pop Duo or Group Performance.
Mm-hmm.
Collab Queen Phoebe Bridgers is back at it again. Episode 105, we talked about Punisher, and here she is, still collabing, still collab queen.
It is my favorite song of the features. It's a very good song.
I agree. When SZA was putting together the album and working on things, she reached out to a lot of people to work on tracks for the album. People that didn't make the cut include Drake, Olivia Rodrigo, Harry Styles.
Wow.
And a lot more other people that we have talked about or maybe we'll talk about sometime. But Phoebe was one of the three that got back to her. And it happened quick. SZA said, that record is insane. She just sent me a DM and it all happened so fast. I'm not really used to that. Personally, I sit on stuff for so long, it takes me years to make albums, so I like being involved in seeing someone else's world from a different angle. She's so effective and cool and a great hang. And I think that's awesome. People were really excited about it. People loved it. Ghost in the Machine peaked at number 40 on the Hot 100, making it Phoebe Bridgers' first top 40 song in the US. And the song got its live debut in 2023 at Madison Square Garden, where Phoebe Bridgers showed up and joined SZA on stage as a surprise guest. Super cool. I'm jealous. But it's all about the machine of the music industry, how stressful it can be, and how she needs somebody to provide comfort when she tries to navigate all this jungle out there, you know? It's a mess, and she just needs that support. I do really love Phoebe's verse on this. It is one of the best. It's just such a shift in pace. Like, I like how it sounds like it belongs on this album, but it's still very uniquely Phoebe Bridgers-esque. I'm really glad it won the Grammy. I think it deserved it.
I agree.
How'd you feel about F2F? It stands for face to face, usually, but it could have other meanings, given the context of the song.
Front to front.
It could mean that, too. Yeah, I don't know. Could mean other things.
Friends to frenemies.
Ooh. Roughly, is about a speaker who's physically and emotionally separated from a partner and really needs to see someone face to face, if you know what I'm saying.
Could be floor to face.
Tripped.
Talking about the 5 second rule.
Oh, got it. Tripping is face to floor.
Yeah. This was a good breath of fresh air, I think, for this album at this point. 13 tracks deep.
I think so too.
Because it has more of a rock vibe to it than what we've been doing.
Absolutely.
Fries to fudge. It's describing like a three-course meal.
Oh, okay. What's the entree in fries to fudge?
I can't think of any F-themed entrees.
Fish.
Oh, no. I just feel foolish.
Foolish.
We're losing it.
I gotta be honest. I don't think anybody gets you.
I mean, you do. That's why we work so well. Oh, you were doing a title track. Sorry. Thought you were just trying to put me down.
Sorry. Yeah, nobody got me. No, I wasn't trying to put you down. Nobody gets me. Lucky number 14. It was the album's fourth single. It peaked at number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. It's been certified platinum. And it's a rarity on this album, an acoustic ballad.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Cool inclusion on an album like this.
Two rarities in a row.
Yeah. I think we really touched everything with this album. She said she wanted to throw a little bit of everything in. And I think she does it in a way that's not compromising the cohesive quality of the album. We get a little rock, we get a little rap, we get a little R&B, we get a little acoustic-y ballad, we get a little pop, just a lot of it. Another song where she just sings it so, so well, Nobody Gets Me. Man. It's about an ex-fiancé after things went south. It kind of walks through this relationship and how it fell apart, and the way that she feels after the smoke clears. He's not around to get her anymore, and nobody else can.
All I know is this song make me want an acoustic ballad album from SZA. They have such a pretty voice.
Oh my gosh, a whole album of this? Holy crap. Yeah, sign me up. You're right. I want more. I think she'd knock that out of the park.
I think she would. It's just such a good song.
Truly. Nobody Gets Me. Honestly, it's one of the most popular songs on the album.
Yeah.
Getting up there slowly but surely.
Does that put it... Is that second place?
No.
Oh, no. Fourth place by only 4 million.
Yeah, it's down there a bit.
Fourth place by 4 million.
Yeah. I'm mad about the next track, Conceited.
You don't like Conceited, or?
No, I love Conceited.
Oh.
It's only got 75 million streams, making it one of the least popular on the record. It debuted at number 58. Why do all of my favorites debut so low, comparatively? What happened? What's wrong with them? Am I wrong? Am I wrong about this album?
Maybe they're growers, not showers.
I don't know, but Conceited is awesome. And I think I loved it the first time I heard it. I'm Betting on Me, Me, Me is a great run. I love that bit. It's one of my favorite parts on this album, bar none.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, this one, it middle of the pack for me. It's not bad, but it wasn't in anywhere near my top.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I just like the style of it. I like the little synth plinks and plunks.
I mean, I've only heard it once.
That's true. And when you heard it, you were like halfway through the album. So you still had half the album to go.
Well, and I was coming off of Nobody Gets Me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Man, I just like it a lot.
I did find the me, me, me's fun. The syncopation there with the beat.
Yeah, totally. It lands on this weird offbeat, which I love. That's kind of what I like about it.
You are a fan of offbeats. That has come up before.
I am. It's one of my strongest inclinations for a playlist pick, because I could listen to this.
Wild.
It may genuinely be my favorite song on the album.
Wow.
I know. It's wild. And it's so... like, not the popular one. I don't get it.
Maybe you're just a little conceited.
Maybe, but it's a song about being yourself, about getting everything that you need and wanting more and just being happy with life. It's great. Bet on yourself.
I would never do that unless I wanted to lose money.
Well, bet on yourself to lose money then. Then you'll win money.
That's a weird money glitch.
We've uncovered a paradox. Infinite money hack. What do you think about Too Late? Track 17.
I'd tell you my thoughts on it, but it's too late.
Oh no, I missed my chance. It is actually one of the least popular songs on the album. Second lowest by stream count. Too Late is okay. We're kind of on a rougher stretch of the album here. You know, Far comes next after Too Late. What do you think about Shirt?
I liked Shirt. You're definitely correct that we closed this album at all gas, no breaks.
One break.
Well, you're right.
Later.
Well, you have to break, I mean, to get off the ride, so.
Sure. Shirt is huge. This was another Grammy-nominated song. It was a third single. It's an interesting place to put a single, track 19. It's also a trap-inspired song, more influences to throw into the SOS melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it was the fans' idea to call the song Shirt.
Because they saw that Winnie the Pooh shirt.
Maybe. But even a step further than that, the fans are the reason it made it onto the album at all. She wasn't even going to include it.
Really?
But fans were like, this rocks, this is a great song. And so fan opinion really swayed her in the other direction. And I'm glad it did, because Shirt is just a standout track on this album for me. And for her and for everybody. Shirt peaked at number 11 on the Hot 100. It got 20.3 million streams its first week. And it's been certified double platinum. So fans picked a winner. Or, well, fans made it a winner, but also picked it. You know what I mean? One of the people that liked it was President Barack Obama. He included the song on one of his famous annual playlists.
Oh.
So if you want to listen like Barack, throw on Shirt. I think it's vibey. I also think it's kind of supposed to function as an epilogue or a sequel to Kill Bill, where she's kind of caught in this aftermath moment of killing her ex with a blood stain on her shirt. I think it's kind of meant to be a nice little wrap up to that story.
Now, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Moving on to Open Arms featuring Travis Scott.
Darn right.
It says, better or worse than Journey's Open Arms?
Oh, wow. What a question. I can't believe that's the question you're asking.
Well, I never know with you, so had to ask.
No, Journey's Open Arms was better.
That was the correct answer.
I know it was, but I do like this Open Arms. You know, we predicted that Travis Scott might win a Grammy. He did not, but we thought he might. It's his fourth time working with SZA. Other times he's worked with SZA include Love Galore, OK Alright, Power is Power, and even Low earlier on this album. I think this is close to my first exposure to Travis Scott as an artist.
As an artist, yes.
Maybe he's popped up incidentally on some features that I don't remember. Does he do better or worse here than his chair-smashing Grammy performance that we watched?
Better.
Okay. I think you're right. He's a lot more chill in this song than he was in Fiend. Oh, man. Open Arms peaked at number 67 globally, number 54 on the Hot 100. It beat Conceited, too. Come on, man. Interestingly, it only got to 59 on the Hot R&B Hip Hop chart. That's kind of weird, isn't it? You would think if it got to 54 on the Hot 100, it would do even better than that on the Hip Hop chart, where it had less diverse competition. We're back to acoustic guitars. You know I love that.
Yeah. I don't think it's as good of a ballad, but it's still more proof that I want a full ballad album.
Yeah, I got to agree. You're right. It's not a Nobody Gets Me. It's not a special, but it's still very solid. Would be right at home on a SZA acoustic ballad album. The song's about an ex who the speaker leaves for her own good. Kind of another follow-up to the self-esteem draining characters in the 1-2 punch that's Blind and Special. This is like the third part in a trilogy in a lot of ways. In fact, also, this is the part where her grandmother comes back.
Grammy! Grammy SZA.
Yeah, the beginning of the song features the Grammy back again. A short little skit. You know, her grandma was actually also featured on a few songs from SZA's first album, Control. So she gets a lot of Grammys. How did you feel about I Hate You, the third to last track, and the second single?
Well, we got off onto a bad foot instantly. I mean, anything that comes up to me and just says I hate you, we instantly got problems.
Oh, yeah. I suddenly got squared up. SZA hates me? What? Well, I hope it grew on you a little bit. Hope you've made up.
Yeah, we got over it. We got past the misunderstanding.
You know what's another interesting acoustic guitar moment? Maybe the most unique acoustic guitar moment on the album is Good Days.
Yep, the second most popular song on the album.
Yeah.
Coming all the way in at track 22.
I know, wild, and one of the biggest. Up Last.
Up Last.
Track 23 of 23, we get the return of a familiar face. ODB.
ODB.
Is back. And we got Forgiveless featuring Old Dirty Bastard from the Wu-Tang Clan, who we talked about on episode 117. This one's unique because it's a posthumous feature. You know, we talked about how ODB passed away unexpectedly in the studio one day. Well, SZA reached out to his estate. She said it came from a piece of documentary footage from Rodney Jerkins, and he was sweet enough to let me use that sample of ODB. She said ODB was freestyling in the back of the footage, so I took the audio. It's cool, and it is really cool. It's a nice tribute to his legacy, and to the legacy of Wu-Tang, really, that he's still featured on Grammy-winning albums even 20 years after his death, you know? Like, it's nice. Now, do we get to know your favorite feature? I mean, ODB is the last one on here.
Sure. I will not disqualify ODB since we haven't done an ODB album.
Okay, just as part of the Wu-Tang plan. Yeah.
But that being said, ODB does not get it.
Wow.
So it doesn't really matter. The answer, Don Toliver.
Don Toliver. Wow, way back up there.
Way back up there.
Track 7. It's almost been a full album that he's in there. Like, track 7, you can make a full album out of 7 tracks, and we've, like, tripled since that. Then. Oh, man. Don Toliver and Used. I agree. That's definitely a strong feature and a really cool song.
It's also just the only name I don't recognize.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. So, the most mysterious and intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Forgiveless, I think it's fine, but it is kind of an unfortunate end to the album as the least popular song. It has the fewest streams.
Yeah.
It debuted at number 76 on the Hot 100. I just, you know, just based on sustained popularity.
All good things have to come to an end, some better than others, and this one,
I know,
is not the best, but...
No, but we had that really strong late record run. Shirt to Good Days are all mega popular, and this just... falls off.
Mm-hmm.
Conceptually, I like it. You know, it's this ruthless response to people who talk behind her back or try to tear her down. It's a punchy little closer. Got a lot of spunk, and I like it. Let's get into Final Spin.
What?
Honestly, I was really impressed by SOS. I did enjoy this album a lot. It's just so long.
So I guess here's my big question for you.
Yeah.
And you can wait to answer it till after you tell me the scores. Do you think it was a better Grammy winner? Like, should it have won instead of Taylor?
Yeah, that is the big question that we're kind of here to answer. I think this album, how do I want to say it? I think this album takes a lot more creative risks than Midnight's does. And I think they pay off a lot stronger than Midnight's does. I also think this album takes a few more swings and misses, but that's because it tries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If you don't strike out every once in a while, you're not swinging for the fences.
Yeah. This album is so long, and from track to track, I found a lot of these songs to kind of be unmemorable. Now, there were a few standouts, you know, a few favorites that I really, really loved. And I think as a whole, the album is absolutely a gem. But I spent a whole month listening to this album on repeat. You know, I gave it the normal albums of the month treatment. And then coming back to it a few weeks later to get ready for this episode, musically, I really only remembered like 6 tracks off the top of my head. Yeah, I just have a lot of mixed feelings about it. Could I have seen it winning the Grammy? Absolutely. Should it have won the Grammy? Maybe. Let's get into scores and then we can talk about Grammy rankings, I suppose.
Sure.
Musically, I'm giving the album a 79. The parts that are really good are excellent. Really, really good. The parts that get lost just kind of pulled it down to a 79 for me. Lyrically, there are some really gem lyrics, but there are also a lot of lyrics. And a lot of them don't resonate with me necessarily in the most meaningful way. Given it's 73, which is solid, but lower than a lot of things I tend to rank. Instruments of production, 84. Really interesting production, really consistent. Cool instrumental choices with guitars and synths. And really, it's just the production on her voice, I think, that sells the whole record in large part. And the overall vibe, I'm giving it a 68 for all the aforementioned reasons, I guess. Overall, it scores a 76.5, which lands it at number 633. Lands it above Olivia Rodrigo's Sour, puts it below A Tribe Called Quest, as far as episodes we've done. How does it compare to other Grammy albums? You know, I did listen to and score all of them. Well, I'm kind of surprised and sad to admit it. SOS ended up the lowest ranked of all this year's Grammy nominees.
Really?
Yeah. But again, I think this album comes in with something to say. It's got a message, it's got a mission, and it executes a lot. It just leaves a lot on the table. I think it succeeds over Midnight's in that regard. This album is pointed and direct and kind of in your face a little bit in a way that Midnight's just can't even kind of be bothered, you know?
Fair enough.
What about you? How's this end up with your Grammy selections?
Yeah, no, I think I like this one better than Midnight's. Here's one thing that I find interesting. I don't think I like it more than Red by Taylor Swift.
Wow, okay.
But I definitely liked it more than Midnight's. It's not just me hating on Taylor Swift. I just don't think it's as good of an album.
No, I think we've proven.
And that surprised me. I went in this expecting to not like this as much as Midnight's.
That surprises me. Even in the Midnight's episode, you said, I expect I'll like SOS better.
Did I?
Yeah.
You know what? That's fair. That's fair. I probably did say that because as I'm thinking back to it, I think, put it this way, going into the Grammys, I thought I would like SOS less.
And then when you listen to Midnight's.
After listening to Midnight's, I realized, oh, I'll probably actually like SOS more because I really didn't like Midnight's. I gave it a 5.
It was, again, milquetoast is a good word to use.
Yeah.
Middling for Taylor Swift.
What I didn't expect was for SOS to score a 9.
Whoa! Another 9 from you. That's awesome.
9 dead heffalumps out of 10 is what I'm giving this one. Because she hunted them.
9 dead heffalumps because she hunted heffalumps. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, 9 dead heffalumps.
That's a fantastic unit. Wow.
I like it. Yeah.
9. Wow. I'm blown away and kind of not surprised. Kind of very surprised, though. So many of these songs you seem...
I think you're not surprised based on what I said about the album as we went through it. But I think if you had to guess pre this episode, you would not have expected a 9.
No, even now I'm surprised. I mean, we talked about... I mean, you liked her ballad type songs and her voice is obviously a highlight.
I think if you broke this record up into 3 albums...
Which you totally could.
Of like 8, 7, 8. I think the bottom 8 and the top 8 both score 9s. And the middle 8 only scores maybe a 7 or an 8. A low 8, high 7, somewhere around there.
Well, that's the part with Smoking on My X Pack. But it's got Ghost in the Machine and F2F to pull it back up.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm giving it a 9.
Interesting.
I'm putting it right above Wiz Khalifa. Rolling Papers.
Wow.
Which is funny because I said I couldn't remember Wiz Khalifa.
Well, his strip club anthem, you couldn't remember specifically Hopes and Dreams, yeah. Which is fine. It's one of the lesser memorable tracks on Rolling Papers. But wow, we're really getting some information here in the Year of Healing. We're learning.
We're learning.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about playlist picks? We can only take less than 10% of the album.
Let me give you my top three first.
Oh, yeah, of course. I just want to know what's kind of in that wheelhouse.
Oh, what do we got coming up?
Love it when you have to ask.
All right. Here's my top three in album order.
Official Connor top three incoming.
Kill Bill.
Nice.
Love Language.
Really?
I really liked Love Language.
Okay.
Ghost in the Machine.
That's a big jump.
Nobody Gets Me.
Uh-huh.
And Honorable Mention Too Late.
What's wrong with Conceited?
I was surprised that you said that was your favorite one.
I like Conceited a lot.
Like I said, it was middle of the road for me.
You like Too Late, huh? Too Late was one of those unimpressive ones for me.
No, I liked Too Late.
Wow, you didn't let on.
Yes, I did. I gave it a honorable mention.
I didn't know they were top three drums.
I felt like this 23-track album deserved an extra pick in there.
Sure.
But that's the one I would have dropped if I was worried about wanting all my picks for next week.
That's so interesting. It bothers me how we do this. And we have such little overlap. It's interesting that you scored the album a 9 and I scored it in the 600s, so we're kind of on the exact opposite side of the coin, and our favorite songs are also on the exact side of the coin.
Yeah, this will be an interesting one to look at on the spreadsheet that shows like my picks versus yours and where they rank up, you know, like the differential.
Polarizing.
That can be found on our website as well, along with the ranking spreadsheet.
Yep. So my playlist pick contenders absolutely do not overlap with yours at all.
No. And I was kind of laughing as we were going through it because I think we're both going to pick something that doesn't necessarily represent the sound of the album.
Maybe not. Well, this album has so many different sounds, it's hard to go wrong. That's like the whole point of it is that it's the melting pot.
Because I think I'm taking Nobody Gets Me, I think.
Okay. I will admit, Nobody Gets Me doesn't sound like much else on the album. You're right.
Okay, yeah. So for me, it's either Nobody Gets Me or Kill Bill. But the reason I think I'm going with Nobody Gets Me is because I know I'll always be in the mood to hear that one. Kill Bill, I think I have to be in the right mood for, or I'm going to, you know, I don't want to pick something that I'm not always going to be in the mood to listen to.
Yeah, you got to be in an X-killing mood for Kill Bill.
Yeah, but I do think Kill Bill would be a great playlist pick a lot of the time.
Sure.
But for me, it's Nobody Gets Me.
Okay. Kill Bill came close to my short list. It didn't quite make the cut. Mine, again, no overlap with you. Conceited, Snooze, Gone Girl, F2F, Ghost in the Machine, Seek and Destroy.
I will say F2F was my other honorable mention that I did drop because I am worried about having all my picks for two episodes from now.
Uh-huh. And so now you just picked it anyway.
Wait, okay. What? I mean, you got that.
Yeah. Well, I might have to ride or die with Conceited.
Fair enough.
It's not a popular pick. I just like it.
Do what you gotta do.
I'm doing what I gotta do, I guess. I guess I just like the big hits from this album. And Conceited.
But you said Kill Bill wasn't even in a row. It's the biggest hit.
It was close. Yeah, I know. But like Snooze, Shirt would be in my upper half. I Hate You would be in my upper half.
Fair enough.
I didn't go for too many of the deeper cuts, I guess. Really interesting results here. But again, I really like the album. I don't know.
Apparently not. It's like in the 600s.
Well, that's just its score. But I don't know if it deserves that kind of score.
Well,
I guess it does.
You're the one that scored it there.
I know. I mean, we've done a couple episodes, quite a few episodes lower than it, so I don't feel that bad.
Wild.
It's no 30 Seconds to Mars.
This is going to be rivaling our Kid A episode in terms of differential.
I think it really will.
I put them above Wiz Khalifa, below B.B. King, two below Kaleo.
Yeah, this one's, you're putting it at number 36 of all the albums we've talked about. For me, it goes right around 122.
Dang.
I know, it's a 90 album gap. Wow. Well, I guess that's going to do it for this week. Stay tuned for next week for another album, another artist. I won't score it this low, I promise.
Spoilers.
I think. Well, I mean, there's a lot above it by the numbers. If you like the podcast, you can find us on social media at Spin It Pod on X, at Spin It Pod Official on Instagram, and of course on the web at www.spinitpod.com. Be sure to tell a friend who speaks fluent Morse code. Do you speak, who understands fluent Morse code about the podcast?
I didn't speak it. I proved that earlier.
True. You did speak Morse code. Tell a friend who speaks Morse code specifically.
Dit, 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 dot, 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 dit, dit, dit.
Tell a friend who speaks Morse code better than Connor. Well, until next week,
keep spinning. Dit, da, da, dit, da, da, dit, dit, da, dit, 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 da, da, dit.